What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line I got my not-so-much pick-and-pop partner, Josh Cohen. How you doing?
Doing all right. My beard game is strong.
Ooh, when was the last time you shaved?
Like a month ago or ever. Probably since the Gobert incident, actually.
Yeah, it's a month today. We're recording on April 11th.
How about that? So pretty much since then.
Yeah, me too. Except I don't have a beard. I just got like a little bit on the chin and a little bit of fuzz under my nose.
Can't grow it out, eh?
Nah, man. I look like a lot of my friends look like this when they were in like grade 6. So I'm like 20 years behind, but you know, what can you do? So Raj, how you feeling?
Yeah, speaking about shaving, I just shaved my head because my hair was getting a bit out of control.
Damn. How's it feel?
You know, desperate times call for desperate measures. It feels like there's a lot less hair on my head, and I feel the wind when I'm going up and down the stairs because that's pretty much the only physical activity I'm getting.
You're going to walk around the house with a hat on just because it's too cold? Have you been doing that?
You know it. No. I've been sticking with the toque because it's still winter. But yeah.
Soon enough, man. All right. Well, we're recording this, like I said, on April 11th. It's been a month since we've had any NBA action. It's been kind of dry, guys. I'm not going to lie. And obviously the NBA sees us too because we get some horse competition. Yay. We get to watch Chris Paul and Trae Young take half-court shots in their own houses. That's all I got.
I hate them for having basketball courts at their places. I wish I had one right now.
Yeah, that would be nice. At least you have a Papa shot.
True, but it's a backbreaker.
Okay. That's sad, man.
The way the balls come down, you have to really bend in order to get the ball. So if you're playing for like more than half an hour, your back is just killing you afterwards, like especially your lower back.
Yo, Raj, have you ever played Papa Shot for half an hour? That's wild.
I haven't reached that level of boredom yet, but maybe in a month, Josh.
I have, and I paid for it. The next day, my lower back was just done. I could barely even walk.
Yo, that's crazy. You went for a full half hour at Papa Shot.
Had to beat my record. At first, I just wanted to beat my record, and then afterwards, I was like, okay, I need to get to 100. And I got to 101, but it was not worth it.
Not worth the back pain?
No.
Just stretch it out.
2 days of back pain.
Stretch it out. Get that foam roller out.
I had to. It barely even worked.
All right. Are you guys going to watch this horse competition? Just quickly while we're at it?
I might tune in for a little bit.
Raj?
Yeah. I'm probably going to end up recording it or watching it live, and it's something.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm probably going to watch because Chauncey is involved. That's my guy. But otherwise, I would have no interest in this. I don't care about Zach LaVine shooting half-court shots from his pool or whatever. Like, who cares? Come on, man.
If Zach LaVine does a dunk, if they actually allow that, they should allow Pierce to lower his net like 3 feet.
Yeah, that would be hilarious. Paul Pierce dunking
Paul on Pierce does like a through-the-legs dunk and he gets like 1 inch off the ground.
He's actually standing as he dunks.
Yeah.
He does a bullpen. That'd be wicked. All right, so we're here. We're going to talk about the best teams that have done it over the last 30 years. Why 30? Because more than 30 is a little much. I don't want to go back to the 80s where guys were, you know, half the league was coked out. The other half of the league, you know, was like just full of Magic and Larry Bird. We've all seen the Lakers and Celtics highlights. I want to talk about the last 30. We're talking about, you know, the 90s Bulls dynasties, the mid-90s Rockets, the Lakers, the Warriors, all that kind of jazz, like the funner stuff, more contemporary basketball. So we're going to look at the best teams that did it, where I think we all did something similar in that we only chose the best team of each dynasty. So no one's going to choose consecutive years of Jordan winning it from like 96 to 98. We're not doing that. We're going to go just top five teams. And yeah, I mean, Raj, let's start it. Let's go with top three. Start with your top three.
All right, well, I think all our three teams in the last 30 years are going to be the same. Maybe the order might vary, but it has to be the 96 Bulls. The team with the second best regular season record of all time. This was a team that was just like a beast from top to bottom. They had obviously Michael Jordan coming back from his hiatus, and They went 15-3 in the playoffs, and it was, I would argue that it was probably Michael Jordan's best team, top to bottom. They were a force. And he obviously won finals MVP, but there was a lot of good players. He was playing with Rodman, Pippen, Kerr, obviously legendary coach Phil Jackson at the helm. I think some people would argue that this team is the best ever. I don't know if there's any debate here. If you want me to just go jump right into number two.
I mean, 96 Bulls is pretty obvious, right, Josh? You have that too?
Yeah, they were also my top three as well. I think they're a team that could span generations and play with any team over the course of the last 30 years just based on the personnel that they had to. Because if you played them in today's day and age, you'd obviously have Rodman at center, and then you can play Kukoc at the four and then Pippen at the three. So they're just a team that can go small or big. They can basically do anything, like a lot of the teams we've seen in the last few years.
Hold on. Would Rodman still be as effective in today's league?
I think so. Absolutely, because he could switch 1 through 5, right? And he's a guy that was probably one of the best defenders in terms of going against Shaq, despite him only being 6'6", because he had such great technique and just lower body strength.
Yeah, I don't know. I find it hard to believe that if you're going to play Rodman at the 5, because we're assuming that, you know, small ball is going to be the thing here, you're going to put him against guys like whose current centers that we have right now, Jokic, Towns, Embiid, Giannis. Like, I'm sure he could lock up a couple of guys, but would he be like a top 5 center if we put him against against the current league?
If you're talking about playoff centers, then yeah, for sure. Because of the fact he can switch, and then obviously the fact that he can guard some of these more mobile centers too, because of how quick he was. Like, he went from being a guy that guarded Jordan back when he was on the Pistons just a few years before that to being a guy who was guarding Shaq 3 years later. So his versatility on defense is pretty much unmatched, unless you're talking about, like, you know, Hakeem and Kevin Garnett.
Kevin Garnett. We'll just throw him in there with Hakeem of all people. Come on, man.
No, I mean, if you look at it, like, Kevin Garnett is probably the best big man defender of all time.
Oh, you meant as defensively? Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, 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 sorry.
Defensively.
Yeah, hard to argue that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. All right, well, we all agree on the number one spot. All right, Raj, what you got?
Well, I didn't say they were number one, but they're my top three.
Whoa, you don't have them as number
one? Whoa, whoa.
Who do you have as number one?
Well, I mean, looking at the numbers today, especially, and like, I was going to pick the Lakers, actually.
Jesus.
From 2000, 2001, the team that went 16-1 in the playoffs. So they're also my top three, but looking at what the Warriors did, the 16-17 Warriors, they had the highest point differential in the playoffs of any team all time. And, you know, their top four was probably the best top four of all time. And as we know, in the playoffs, only 6-7 guys usually matter. So it's hard to not put them at number one based on their dominance.
Yeah.
See, I'm gonna jump in at number two. And I would say the 16-17 Warriors were the second best team in the last 30 years. Obviously, they went from 73-9, losing in Game 7 the year prior, to adding an MVP candidate in Kevin Durant. So, like you mentioned, their starting four was like up there with Jordan, Kerr, Rodman, Pippen. The only difference I would say is this team on paper was just so much.
Wait a second,
you
put Steve Kerr in the top four?
Yeah, no, we're not doing that.
They had a top three, sure, and then if you want to put four, it's Kukoc.
Yeah, we're not putting Kerr as a major contributor.
I mean, I love Steve Kerr and everything, and he was a great shooter, obviously, and one of the best of all time, but he came off the bench and averaged like 6 points a game.
Yeah.
Let's be real.
Nah. Okay. Well, he's still a very valuable piece to them winning a championship.
Okay. I'll buy that.
Right. Like the same way, I guess, if you want to throw in Andre Iguodala to the Warriors' top four or five. Because like Draymond, obviously he does a lot on defense, but statistically speaking, on offense he's like not a liability, but. He doesn't put up quite the numbers, but he's still an integral part of the team.
Draymond,
I think,
would
if you're
be...
talking like guys who are playing, you know, the most important minutes of the game, though, I think in that case you'd have to put Ron Harper in the five for Chicago, because he always played at point guard, and he was like, you know, the nominal point guard, even though like MJ was basically the ball handler, sort of like what the Lakers did with Derek Fisher and Kobe. But Harper was always a guy that would guard basically anybody on the other team besides the big guy. So he's another guy you could just switch like 1 through 4 with. And, you know, before his Chicago days, you know, before he got injured, he was a 25-point-per-game guy. And then he became a guy who's, you know, he probably averaged like 7 to 10 points a game in the playoffs usually, but defensively he was a monster.
So we're looking at a starting five of Harper, Jordan, Pippen, or sorry, not starting five, but closing five. Harper, Rodman, Jordan, Pippen, Kukoc?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes they played Longley depending on who they play. On the matchup. If you're going against the Knicks and Ewing, you're going to play Longley, obviously. Yeah. Most of the time, anyway.
And then, obviously, for the 17 Warriors, you got Steph, Klay, KD, Draymond, and then insert Iguodala, most likely, to close the games.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Back then, he was still, like, not in his prime, obviously, but he was still very good.
Yeah, but, like, again, I think the competition, back to the original point, I think the competition is the Warriors, yes, they were the best team, but the competition they went against was no match, whereas in the Bulls, obviously, they ended up winning a dynasty. That was the first year of their second dynasty in that decade. And I still think if you have the best player ever in Michael Jordan on your team, it's hard not to have you as one of the best teams in the last 30 years. And they had an equally impressive record, like 15-3, and I think two of the losses they had in those playoffs were when I think the series was up 3-1 and they were like kind of cruising. But I agree. I think number two team overall in the last 30 years has been the 17 Warriors. But I wouldn't put them above the Bulls, but that's just me.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough because again, it's different generations, different styles of basketball. Whereas, you know, back in 96, you had to play one-on-one defense because if you shaded somebody over immediately, they'd whistle illegal defense on you. So you couldn't shade against Jordan. It was a whole different game, obviously. Whereas in today's day and age, that's all teams do is play some sort of zone. They might call it something else, obviously, but most of the time, players are getting shaded to one area in order to, you know, be able to condense the floor, really. So if you play these teams against each other, I think it all depends on which rules you're, you know, playing with, obviously. And if the teams are able to adjust to the other, you know, generation's rules. And just looking at the teams on their own, just like watching the games from back then versus now, competition-wise, I think that the 16-17 Warriors had better competition versus the teams back in the 90s. Because the teams back in the 90s, I mean, they brought in a bunch of new franchises, like with Toronto and Vancouver and such. And some of those teams, like their record is inflated from back then to 72-10. Whereas I think the Warriors throughout the regular season, they were going against better competition overall in the regular season. And the postseason, I don't know. I mean, Chicago played against Miami, who had Mourning and Marley, New York, Orlando, and then Seattle. They were up 3-0 against Seattle, like you said, and they lost us two games in a row. And then everyone started panicking, and then obviously Jordan brought it home. But I think that based on watching the games, I think that I would probably take the Warriors. I think they just had more talent overall.
So you would have the Bulls number two at least?
Honestly, going into this, I was going to choose the Lakers from 2000-2001 as my number one team. Because honestly, like when I first started watching basketball, and even since then, I think that they probably had the most dominant postseason run out of anybody. Suns, the Warriors maybe. But the Lakers just like blew through everyone, and nobody expected that either based on the regular season that they had. But we'll get into that. So what was your top three? What was your third team?
And then I had the 01 Lakers as my number three for all the reasons you mentioned. And I think that was obviously Shaq's biggest playoff performance of his career, and especially in the finals when he did it against the reigning defensive player of the year in Dikembe Mutombo. And he obviously, like, he carried that team, and obviously it was a young Kobe by his side. And, like, that Lakers team didn't have the same regular season, but they were able to turn it on in the playoffs. That was, like, the reason why I didn't put them above in the one or two spot, because regular season-wise, they had 56 wins, I believe, compared to the Bulls, who had 72, and the Golden State Warriors, who had, like, 68 or so, like, 67, I believe. So they were equally as impressive in the playoffs. I just think overall as a team, I think those other two teams, the Warriors and the Bulls, had a better overall season, regular season and playoffs.
Would you say that that 0-1 Lakers team was probably the deepest out of the three that we've talked about?
If you're talking about playoffs, I think the Warriors have the deepest team since you have Iguodala. I think they had David West on that team as well, yeah, and then Sean Livingston. So that's an amazing top eight.
I would say just to answer your question, I think the Warriors probably had the deepest team, and I think the Lakers had some very good players that were at the tail end of their career as well, but I think they have had probably more depth than the Bulls, but overall, like, the top two of the Lakers is really what pushed them over the top, and Shaq was just dominant. Like, he averaged like 35 points, I think, that in the finals or in the playoffs that year.
Yeah, okay. But the issue I'm having is that when we talk about the 17 Warriors, like, obviously we're talking about guys like Livingston, Iguodala, David West, as you had mentioned, Josh. And then you look at, those are the only veterans that they had on the team, aside from the starters, right? The rest of the guys are like, I guess JaVale's technically a starter or a veteran at that point, but otherwise you got Ian Clark, barely in the league now. Damian
Don't
Jones.
Don't forget your boy Zaza.
Yeah, true. Zaza was there. Ah, yeah, you're right. That is a pretty deep team. McCaw, McAdoo, young guys. Anyways, back to my point. You look at the 0-1 Lakers, you got Rick Fox. You know what I mean? Tyronn Lue, savvy vet at that point. Isaiah Ryder, B. Shaw. These guys were all around the league for a while. So you can make the assumption that the understanding going into the playoffs was, all right, now it's time to really turn it on. Right? Now it's time to go. And then that's when they went, 16-1 in the playoffs? That's a beastly record. That's literally untouchable, right?
Both the Lakers and the Warriors, the 2001 Lakers and the 16-17 Warriors, they only lost the one game because of, you know, not a fluke performance, obviously, but like one of the greatest performances of all time. Both with Iverson, obviously, I think he scored like 47 or 50 points in that game, in game one against the Lakers. And then with the Warriors, they lost to the Cavs because the Cavs hit like 24 threes, which is a finals record at the time, which I still think it might be. So they both lost to like anomaly games. So they both could have gone undefeated throughout the entire playoffs if that one game didn't pop up. So
I actually forgot that the Warriors went 16-1, to be honest.
Yeah, the one game that they lost, like, Cleveland just could not miss in the start of the game. And it was still close throughout, too. It was still within like 10, 12 points for the most of the game. But, you know, it's hard to beat a team when you have like 75 points from the three-point line.
Yeah, when Richard Jefferson is torching you.
Yeah, J.R. Smith, too.
Yeah, classic JR game. All right, so top three, we have a list between the 96 Bulls, 17 Warriors, and 0-1 Lakers in some sort of order, right? Like, yes, without a doubt. And then I guess at the end of the day, the argument really goes to how much you value Jordan in terms of his single-handedly being able to carry a team, right? To essentially a six-year dynasty as a whole. Minus the 2 years that he obviously left in 94-95. And then when you look at teams like the 17 Warriors, it was definitely more of a group effort, right? Like, everyone on that team had a role, except everyone was an all-star at that point. That's essentially what we're breaking the argument down to, is just how much can Jordan do on his own with Pippen and Rodman compared to a team with four all-stars and two MVPs.
Yeah, I don't think these teams are separated by much, like you said. So you just have to look at the little things like supporting cast, obviously, point differential in the playoffs, especially when teams are needing to be their most dominant. And, you know, looking at the playoffs for the Bulls, especially, like, the one thing that stood out for me was Scottie Pippen shot 39% from field goal range throughout the playoffs. And he only averaged 17 points a game. And then you only had one other player in double digits throughout the playoffs, which was Kukoc at 11 points a game. So, supporting cast-wise, like, everyone did their job, obviously. But like you said, like, Jordan averaged 31 points a game in that playoffs. And, you know, they have three losses versus one. So I know it's different eras and everything, but those little things just sort of stood out to me in that I don't think the Bulls supporting cast was as good as the Warriors especially. And then with the Lakers, like, they were the ultimate, you know, flip the switch type of team or in the playoffs, they just couldn't be beaten because Kobe and Shaq averaged 59 points per game together. And that was probably the most dominant run as a duo.
That's insane.
Yeah, that's absurd.
Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of... Man, I don't know. I really... Naturally, I just assume that you say the 96 Bulls are the best team ever because of their ability to just handle their business in the playoffs. Because Jordan is Jordan, right? Like, he's the GOAT. Let's all be real here. My question now is, can we really rely on stats to be the final dictator of how we analyze these teams? Because the pace of the games have changed so much, the style of play has changed so much, even the creation of teams as a whole has changed to that you want well-rounded teams now, right? Like, it's no longer the ISO game where you just let one guy go to work. Because as we've seen with so many great teams, like the 0-1 76ers, we saw in OKC for all those years with Durant and Westbrook that ISO ball doesn't work anymore. So, I don't know. I think my whole point here is, can we really rely on stats to be the differentiating cause that we look at? Because I don't think you can anymore.
I mean, it's all a part of one big formula, right? You have to look at, you know, the play on the court, obviously, the eye test, stats, and just overall lineup construction. And you got to say to yourself, can this team play against all these other teams from different eras based on the personnel that they have? And I think that the Warriors are the most equipped to play anybody from any time, just based on how many, you know, 6'7" plus guys that they have that can guard multiple positions. And just be able to score it, like scoring at will, obviously. I think the Warriors, I don't think it's really a question that they're probably the most dominant offensive team of all time. And then defensively, they were second in the regular season. So they were first and second overall in that season. But again, going back to the Bulls, the one thing that separates them is they have the best defensive rating of all time. So Milwaukee's actually second, 0.1 behind them from this year. But right now, the Bulls still have the best defensive rating ever, so that team is just a beast defensively. And if you go through some of the box scores back then, like, they were, you know, keeping some teams in the 60s and 70s. And they have Jordan on their team, where you can differentiate them versus, like, the Pistons from 2004, because they had guys who could score on their team, unlike the Pistons. Ooh. So they had the most dominant defense ever and the most dominant offensive player ever, so that's why a lot of people obviously consider them to be the best ever.
Big shout-out to the 04 Pistons, my squad.
I had to get them in there for you.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Got you. Yeah, man. The more you say it, the more I'm liking this Lakers team. I think I may have flipped the switch. Just like the Lakers did. Because this team is so well-rounded. Like you said, they literally just turned it on in the playoffs when they had to. Because it was very evident all year that Shaq is just chilling. And then as soon as the playoffs hit, like, something just clicked.
Yeah, for sure. But, like, that's part of the makeup. Like, we can always say what if and, like, if they put it all on the floor. But, like, that team won 56 games compared to a Bulls team that won 72 in the regular season. And you can only play whoever's in front of you. So, yes, the competition might have been less competitive for that 96 Bulls team. But just to have that record and to have that consistency of dominating in the regular season and dominating all the way through the rest of the playoffs after Michael Jordan hadn't played competitive basketball in 2 years or 3 years. For me, like, I just look at that and the way they won, like, they had the second best, I think, or third best point differential, playoff point differential ever. And, like, it's hard to put them lower than two. I can maybe see how the Warriors, just on how they're built with Durant and Klay and Steph and Draymond and Iguodala, and, like, just the versatility of that team. And nowadays basketball has become, all the players have to be very versatile. You're not, like, an expert at one thing. Like, you have to do a bit of everything very well. And I can see how the Warriors are number one, but I don't think the Lakers could be put ahead of the 96 Bulls. Like, that's just me.
Okay, I have a question. So, Josh, earlier you mentioned that, you know, if you put these guys on the court today, what would happen? Or in back then, right? Like, you were talking about how teams would be adaptable to whatever generation that you're playing in. My issue with that is, I'd like to compare teams to the rest of the NBA at the time, right? So I'm comparing the 96 Bulls to the 96 NBA, the 01 Lakers to the 01 NBA, 17 Warriors to the 17 NBA, and their level of dominance as compared to everyone else, right? So that, Raj, like, to back your point, that's when their regular season record really shows, is that, you know, the Bulls went 72 and 10, right? So that's like,
do you know, sorry, I just have to chime in that season, regular season and playoffs, they've only lost, I believe, two games by double digits in the entire year.
Yeah, that's insane.
And they were, they lost three of those games in the regular season by a bucket or less.
Yeah,
they lost to the Raptors too.
Yeah, I was gonna say one of those bucket or less ones. So I think that's how you have to compare these teams, is just how they played against everyone else. And to be honest, what kind of fear they instilled in the rest of the league. Like, we've all heard the stories that whenever teams played against Jordan, they would hope that Jordan just didn't care for the day. And then as soon as that, like, that one thing hit and someone just ticked him off, he would just, like, go to this other level.
Anyway, I'm playing, right? But JR is having a good game. Mm-hmm. You know, JR Mike.
JR Ryder.
Like, yeah, JR Ryder. Shout out to JR Ryder, right?
Easy Ryder.
So I'm like, so as we come out the timeout, just I'm on, y'all. Y'all, I can't even explain it. I was just like, yo, keep killing that nigga, yo. Killing that nigga. Boning him, yo, straight up. You having a good game, Joe. Keep going. But it was on some, like, just fly by. Like, he was like, yeah, you too. So as I'm walking off, the nigga right here, Mike can hear me. But I don't really give a fuck. So I'm like, so I double back, like, yeah, man, keep killing that nigga, yo. You killing that motherfucker. So as I say that, I feel it. Hands on hips, legs locked. Then look, the nigga stabbed me for about 15 seconds.
You feel that?
So I start to feel it. There's two ways you can go in this. I can walk this off, act like I don't even feel it, and play it off and dummy out. Fuck that. Now I'm in here, I got I'm on. Keep killing this nigga. Okay, keep it up. So I hear JR go, all right, y'all fella, keep going. Yeah, you too. So he's trying to get me off and over. I don't even, you know, now that I recall it, he was trying to kind of just get off and over. So he go, so I double back, go, and get ready to say something. So he go, hey, look, Mike, he don't really know how we, I see him and Mike having a conversation. So he's like, he don't really know, he excited, whatever. So now MJ on the back leg joint, you know.
He's leaning on him. Is so that right?
Say, okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, huh? I can't even really describe the next, like, 6 to 7 minutes of play, y'all. In this next 6 to 7 minutes of play, y'all, we get two 10-second calls. You know, when you bring the ball up, two 10-second calls. We down 25 now. It was just at two. Mike had 18. He had, like, 40 now. JR, myself, we ain't scored in, like, about 4 minutes. And I subbed, like, three of the starters. Like, it's just finally flipped. It got bad quick, y'all. I come to the joint. And then they notice when you come and you've been on the run, when you not got back on the floor, got back, had to rebound, had, and you feel like you on defense all the time, you come to the bench like this. So I was like, JR, man, my bad, dog. I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry. He like, it's cool, man. I told you, just shut your ass up, man. You're not fine. So you got in between the Gatorade there where you like, damn, and next thing you know, we over there like this. That's it. And Mike came down, okay, young fella, okay, damn, young fella, damn, y'all done, damn, young fella. Never talk shit to Mike ever again in life.
I think that, man, yeah, that, I'm flip-flopping a lot, but that might be the real reason I have the Bulls at one. So I went Bulls, Warriors, and then Lakers as my 1-2-3 initially.
Yeah, but the thing is, against the Warriors, you have to hope that three out of the four guys are not having a good game. And if two are having a good game, you're probably going to lose.
No, you weren't. Insane. You weren't hoping for three out of them. You were hoping for two.
You're hoping that three guys would have a below average game in order to beat them. Because if you have, like, Steph and Clay are having a great game, you know Kevin Durant's going to put in 20, right? And then Draymond's going to be good on defense. So even if he's sucking on offense, they're still going to win. So I think against the Warriors, like, you really had to hope that at least three of those guys were having below average games by their standards.
True. True. The Warriors are most recently in our minds. I don't remember them instilling fear the same way that
They were destroying teams. They didn't even have to play defense, and yet they were still second in the league throughout the entire season. And they're going against much better teams than the teams that the Bulls were playing back then, again, because of the expansion. And, you know, the talent wasn't really spread out the same way as it is today, I don't think.
So what is your list now, Josh?
I started off going into this before looking at everything with the Lakers at number one. But now I have the Warriors at one. I would say, I'm not going to bring my bias into this. I'll say the Bulls at two and then Lakers at three.
Your bias.
Honestly, like, the Lakers are probably the most dominant team playoff-wise that I've ever seen.
Yeah, their postseason run was insane. I'll give you that.
Does that matter more than the entirety of the entire season? Yeah, depends who you're talking to, I guess.
Yeah, and it depends on how much weight you put on the playoffs versus the regular season. Like, I'm not saying the regular season has the same weight, but it definitely has a weight. And, like, these teams are very, like when you're comparing teams from different eras, like, you're really, like, nitpicking. And the Lakers, amazing playoff. I think out of all these teams that I have, I'd say I agree with you. They had the most dominant playoffs, but their regular season performance just wasn't at the same level as the Bulls or the Warriors. And that factors in at least a certain percent, maybe 20% or 30% on how I view these teams.
Yo, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show onto all the apps that people like to listen to? How do you make money? The answer was pretty simple for me. I started using Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. So that means you can get paid immediately, like right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading you this ad. Super simple. So if you always wanted to start a podcast, let's start now. Go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of producers using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. See you soon. All right. Josh, who do you have at your number four? I think this is where we're going to start differentiating a lot.
We can still choose the Bulls from a different era, right? From a different dynasty?
Yeah, let's not do that second three-peat of the Bulls.
Let's not do that.
Yeah, so we're not going 96 to 98 Bulls.
No, I mean like from 91, 92.
Yeah, I'll allow it. Raj, do you care? I think it's a totally different team, yeah.
Yeah, so I would say the Bulls are probably number four. I was going to pick them or the Spurs from 13, 14. So, yeah, again, those two teams are interchangeable too at 4 and 5 for me. But the 91-92 Bulls went 67-15, coached by Phil Jackson, obviously. They were first in offense, fourth in defense in the regular season. And in the playoffs, they lost 7 games. They had some really competitive series against the Knicks, Cavs, and then the Trailblazers in, you know, those infamous games with Jordan versus Drexler. But they had a really well-rounded roster as well. They didn't have, you know, obviously Rodman back then. But they had Horace Grant, who was giving them like around 16 and 12 every game. And he had those great goggles on as well. And then you had Bill Cartwright at center and his absolutely just disgusting jump shot. But he was effective with Jordan when they played together. And their depth, like the guys who, like the role players that played with Jordan and Pippen back then just exclusively played their roles and didn't step outside that. So he had a bunch of guys averaging like between 5 and 8 points a game, but they did their jobs. And that was a really dominant team back then.
Yeah, I mean, talk about a team that was top-loaded. You're looking at Jordan, who averaged 34.5 in the playoffs. Pippen, 19.5. Horace Grant, 11.3. Like, look at that drop-off. My God. And then after that, it's like Paxton at nearly 8 points a game. It was literally just everyone feed the ball to Jordan and let him do his work. This is when Jordan had just overcome... who was it that they beat in 91? The Lakers?
Yeah, the first championship was the Lakers.
Yeah, this is when Jordan was coming into his prime. Like, this was the Jordan that everyone wanted to see when he, like, not just made a name for himself, but took over the league as, you know, this is my time kind of thing. I like that pick. Raj, who did you have at number four?
Surprisingly, I had the exact same pick with Josh as the 91 Bulls. I consider them a completely different team, and 30 years ago, they still meet the criteria. So it's hard not to pick a team with Jordan on it, and this was their first of many championships and probably the second best team of the Jordan Bulls era.
Yeah. Actually, I went with the 14 Spurs. How about that? I think they, with the way that team was assembled, with obviously spearheaded by Duncan, like, leading the charge, and then obviously you have the rest of the remaining duo to set out the three with Ginobili and Parker. Like, that was them going into the sunset. And then you have emerging Kawhi. And then the way this team played, it was, I want to say it, like, almost modernized the NBA to what we know now, where it's spread offense, constant ball movement, awesome team chemistry, like one of the best team chemistries that ever, like, been in the league for a long time. And obviously you had Pop coaching them, and it was the revenge series for the Spurs after losing to the Heat in 13. They just whooped the Heat's ass in 14, and that's why I had them there.
Yeah, I mean, in that season too, like, they were truly playing the beautiful game, right? Like, their offense in terms of watchability, besides, I guess, maybe the Warriors, just because of how good they were because of their top three guys. Just in terms of watchability, I think the Spurs are probably number two, or maybe even number one, depending on your preference, in terms of, like, how they move the ball, how they move bodies. Like, their offense just fluid, and, like, everyone who came in the game was playing the exact same style, and they knew where to be on the floor. And, I mean, it was just incredible to watch, obviously. And anybody can run a pick and roll in that team, even, like, guys like coming in like Patty Mills. And obviously Boris Diaw was huge for them in the finals, especially too, being able to play the four and the five and being able to switch on guys like LeBron and give, you know, Kawhi some breathers on the bench. But yeah, the Spurs team, especially in the finals, I think everything came together for them in the finals. They had some problems at times throughout the first couple rounds, but they just got better as the playoffs went along.
Yeah, their first couple of series were a seven-game series, right? Against, I want to say it was the Rockets and somebody else at that time.
I think it was against Dallas, but I'm just going to search that right now.
Yeah. Who do you think was the highest scoring player on that team in the playoffs?
I did my research, so I already know who it is.
Okay, Raj, who do you think was the highest scoring player in the playoffs?
In the playoffs?
Yeah.
Oof. I'm going to have to go. Duncan actually didn't have a great playoffs, if I remember correctly. Like, not great, but, like, he wasn't leading the team. So I would have to say Ginobili?
Close. It was Parker. Parker had 17.4 points to lead the team in the playoffs. Compare that to Jordan's, like, 30 or 35 points.
Yeah, I mean, they had four guys style. Over 14 points a game, and then two guys at 9 points a game. So this might be, like, the deepest offensive team overall.
Yeah. And then their defense is beautiful. Like, constant rotations. Again, this is when you started seeing a lot of, like, wing players just moving around constantly, right? And then any defense anchored by Tim Duncan is obviously going to be amazing. I had the Spurs at number four. I just love the way this team plays. And like I said, I think they sort of revolutionized it. I mean, the 12 and 13 Heat really brought threes into the equation as, you know, being that primary threat on offense. But the Spurs' movement was essentially, like, the starting point for, like, the Warriors that we know now. Whereas the Heat, I would say, were more similar to, like, the Rockets now, where everyone just stood in the corner and then waited for LeBron, or if you want to look at the Rockets now, Harden.
I don't know about
as
that.
Being the primary guy.
I mean, I'm not a big fan of the Heat, but, you know, after the first season where they lost to Dallas, I think they made a lot of changes on offense, and they had a lot more movement-based stuff because they just realized, like, you know, just isolating LeBron every time is just not going to work.
No, but it wasn't just – I'm not saying it was ISO LeBron. I'm saying it was let LeBron go to work. Mike Miller, Shane Battier, you guys stand in the corner and wait for your threes. Chris Bosh, you stand at the wing and wait for your three. He'll get it to you eventually, but there's not going to be, like, very rarely did you see a play that started with LeBron to Battier to Miller to Bosch back to LeBron. Right? It was always one pass shoot. That's right.
I don't know.
It was also a lot of LeBron putting pressure on the defense and then finding the open man, whoever left their defender or sorry, their offensive player and went to double LeBron. It was a less of a team ball game, but still the Heat were a decent team.
Yeah, just a decent repeat champion. yeah. And then at my five, I had the 92 Bulls. So we already talked about it. Jordan's a GOAT. We all know this. Let him do his thing. Who'd you guys have at five? Let's go with Josh. Who'd you have at five? Did you figure it out?
I have the Spurs at five, but honestly, I want to switch them around. I have the Spurs at four now.
Yeah, my man.
Just because I enjoy watching them so much. Again, yeah. Bias.
Yeah. Also had your boy Matt Bonner on that team.
Yeah, the Spurs were deep, man. I mean, they started Splitter, only played, I think, 19 minutes in the playoffs per game. And, you know, Diaw would come in and play between 25 and 35, depending on the matchup. Then you obviously had Bellinelli off the bench in one of his better shooting seasons. And, you know, Danny Green, obviously, was a beast, too, throughout the playoffs. And the season before that, he almost won Finals MVP just because of how hot he was from three.
Yo, that Danny Green Finals MVP run was amazing. Those three games.
Yeah, that was great.
Good stuff. All right, Raj, who do you have at your five?
Slightly disappointed here, but I'm going to agree with you guys and say the 14 Spurs. I had them number five. And again, it's just because this team, on paper, you would assume that the Heat would be able to repeat again. But this team was just so well balanced, so well coached. They had like different ways of beating you. They played like... Just for a team of that's not with some, obviously Tim Duncan is the key player anchoring that defense, but they don't have big names on the defensive end. Obviously Kawhi is now a lockdown defender, but he was still a young player in I believe his third season then, and very good defensively. But that team was just super impressive.
Yeah, I mean they had Aaron Baines on that team, and he barely even played.
I was gonna say Aaron Baines made his name there. Not in that he was like a valuable contributor like Splitter was, but he was around. He was definitely known, at least in the finals, with his whopping 2.3 points per game. Do you guys have any honorable mentions?
I mean, for me, I'm obviously going to choose the Raptors from last year, but honestly, I would say
Homer.
2008 Celtics. For me, I mean, throughout the course of the regular season, like they were one of the most dominant regular season teams of all time, despite, you know, not even playing together before that season, obviously, since they traded for Ray Allen and KG. They just started off, and I think they won like, I think they were like 36 and like 4 to start off the season or something crazy like that.
Jesus.
So, yeah, they were a really dominant regular season team, and defensively, they were just an absolute monster. And like a bunch of these teams that we've mentioned before, they could play a bunch of different styles. Like they didn't do it too often where they had KG at center, but when they did, they played him at the center, and then they had Posey at the four, and then they had Rondo, Pierce, and Ray Allen, obviously. But they could just play a bunch of different styles, and whoever they brought in, like defensively, they were just unreal because KG can just cover up so much area, and they could force players to the basket, sort of like, you know, going back to another team that almost won. Orlando, during like the late 2000s, when they would just funnel everything to Dwight, it was sort of the same idea with the Celtics. And, you know, Perkins back then was actually a really good defensive player. Whereas you compare him to, you know, his days in OKC when they played Miami in the finals, like that was probably the reason why they didn't win that finals, is because they played him like 25 minutes a game when Chris Bosh is playing center for Miami. So, I mean, if they played Serge at center in that series, who knows what would have happened, right? But yeah, for me, I would say honorable mention to the Celtics in 2008. And I think the Raptors deserve to be on this list too, just based on how deep they are. And, you know, having five guys in your starting lineup that can generate offense for you is pretty nice.
Wait. Did you say five guys in your starting lineup generating offense?
Counting Van Vliet. We'll count the finals starting lineup.
Like, you want closing lineups, not starting. Danny Green did not facilitate any offense last year. Let's be real.
No, but Van Vliet started a lot of the games in the finals, so I'm including him.
Yeah, but if you're including Van Vliet, then you have to look at his performance against the 76ers and also against the Bucks in the first two games where he was a complete non-factor.
Yeah, Van Vliet has a very clear line of like pre-daddy and post-daddy Van Vliet.
It's true.
Yeah, and they were very deep, and they had different ways of beating you, which, like, credit to the Raptors, that was a huge reason why they're the NBA champions. But I also think if you look at, besides Ibaka and Van Vliet coming off the bench, like, Powell was really a non-factor last year, and then obviously Jeremy Lin, I think it's Eric Moreland, they didn't have that much depth coming off the bench. Like, obviously, they had Ibaka, which was huge.
Van Vliet and Ibaka is not enough for you?
Yeah, but Danny Green wasn't the player that he was with the 2013 Spurs or the 2014 Spurs.
No, but he's still a guy that's not going to be exploited on defense. Like, he can still play these games and be a threat on offense and be a spacer, at least. To where he's not going to be a total negative. Like, even in the games against the Warriors where he wasn't really hitting, or even, you know, Philadelphia, at least he could defend, you know, multiple positions and be a guy who you still have to play within 2 feet of.
Yeah, he wasn't, like, a liability on either end of the floor. Like, you can't say that he was as bad as, you know, Tony Allen, where the defense wouldn't bother covering him, but he definitely wasn't a major positive on the offensive end either, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. They deserve to be shouted out in this. Yo, Josh.
To mention. Yeah.
Josh, you brought up the 08 Celtics. I actually got a great story for you. So in 08, after like the school year, I went to Vietnam. So I was watching the finals at like in the middle of the night kind of thing. Or I guess early morning. It would be like 7 a.m. tip-offs. And I distinctly remember watching a clip of... Because you remember how Ray Allen just like caught fire in like two or three games?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we were watching, I was watching it with my uncle, and like Ray Allen was just like going off. And I was like, yo, man, I love Ray Allen. And he's like, yeah, that guy's really good. I like the guys that can shoot it from really far away. Obviously, he's like an old Asian man, doesn't really know what's happening. And so he was like, yeah, how do you play? I was like, ah, you know, I'm kind of like that guy. So, you know, in Vietnam, I'm kind of like the Ray Allen.
You're the Ray Allen of Vietnam, huh?
That's it. That's the end of my story. I'm kind of like Ray Allen in Vietnam.
Oh my goodness! Did you announce that you actually called yourself the Ray Allen, or did your family member there?
No. I was like, he asked me how I played, and I was like, yeah, I play like that guy. He's like, ah, you must be pretty good shooting that far away all the time.
You should have shown him like clips of Steph instead, and be like, yeah, I play like him instead.
Oh man,
I dribble like Steph.
No, Ray's got a pure shot. That's all I wanted was the Ray Allen jump shot.
Yeah, your jump shots are pretty comparable. You shoot from the hip, he shoots perfectly. I mean, it's pretty close.
It's pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, pretty much the same.
I definitely have a Steph Curry shot.
Oh, Kevin, man. Martin.
What?
Kevin
you
Martin.
Got, you got those calves, Peter.
You dick. Who else can we... I'm going to shout out the 04 Pistons. I got to. This was my team growing up. I started watching ball in like 02, 03. Literally when Tayshaun Prince was a rookie. So watching the 04 Pistons win was great. Got my boy, obviously you know the starting five, but lesser known characters, Mike James, Lindsey Hunter, Eldon Campbell, Mehmet Okur. It's a powerful squad. Do you guys think that the Pistons would have won if they drafted Melo instead of Darko?
Probably not.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think he would have demanded way too much playing time and probably eaten up Tayshaun's playing time.
And plus, he's still young at that time, too, right? So, I mean, the year that they won, Darko was in his, what, second year?
Rookie.
Oh, was it rookie?
Yeah, so, rookie year. Rookie year Melo.
I mean, if he's taking Tayshaun's minutes and their defense isn't as formidable as it was, then it's hard to see them winning the championship because their offense wasn't great. He'd obviously improve them on offense, too, but, you know, in the playoffs especially, like, you need a top 2-3 defense in order to win, usually.
Yeah, especially against that Lakers team in 04. Like, they were in shambles. We all know the stories of how Kobe and Shaq broke up at the time, but it doesn't mean they weren't still a beastly team.
So. Yeah, 100%. And another team that sort of goes under the radar, I think, is probably the 06-07 Spurs. I think they beat the Pistons that year, if I'm not mistaken.
No, they swept the Cavs.
With the Cavs? Okay, sorry. Yeah, it was the Cavs.
In 07, so. That was the year that LeBron, LeBron went off. I remember there was one game where he had 25 of the last 26 points against the Pistons to bring them to the finals.
Yeah, he had that crazy fadeaway over Billups too.
Yeah, that was a year that LeBron, like, everyone in the league thought that LeBron had no business being in the finals, but he somehow carried the team there. And I don't know, if you, in my opinion, you shouldn't really count that towards LeBron's finals record because he carried a team of, like, you know, nobodies.
Yeah, nobody's. Sasha Pavlovich was starting in that series.
Yeah, Pavlovich, Danielle Marshall was like their four. It was Boobie Gibson. Boobie Gibson was a role player, a major role player for this team. So, but yes, shout out to the 07 Spurs also. Shout out to the Spurs in general. Spurs had a beastly run there.
I mean, that was the year where they beat the Suns when Robert Horry hip-checked Nash into the scorers table. So I want to see, like, the Suns probably should have won that year if they wouldn't have given those suspensions out to, I think it was Amare and Diaw.
Yeah.
For coming off the bench and, like, putting one foot on the floor, which is just crazy. I was so angry watching that back then.
David Stern was on one, man.
That Spurs team was tough, though. Like, even those games, like game four, the Suns had to put everything on the line and put everything in that game in order to actually beat them by, like, I think it's like 5 or 7 points. And the entire game, it felt like the Spurs were in total control. And yet, you know, the series went back 2-2, and the rest was history after Horry had that cheap shot. Very smart of him to do that. It's probably the second most influential cheap shot in the history of basketball besides, you know, LeBron going underneath or, you know, causing Draymond to try to, like, hit him in the nuts. So
no, hold on. LeBron did not cause anything. LeBron
knew what he was doing. The game was, like, out of hand. It was, like, a 13-point game with, like, 25 seconds left.
Yeah, fine. But Draymond still did it. It wasn't a cheap shot. It was a cheap shot on Draymond, man.
I know, but LeBron caused that.
Why are you kicking people in the crotch? Or punching them? Whatever.
Yeah, and I mean, Draymond had 2 nut shots on Steven Adams a couple series before that, too.
Exactly. That's not LeBron's fault. I'm not blaming LeBron on this one.
No, LeBron's calculating. LeBron totally set that up. He knew what he was doing. He knew that was their only chance of coming back.
Yeah, he played his cards, man.
I'm not saying it wasn't smart. I'm just saying, you know, if Draymond plays in that game five, it's 4-1 Warriors, and then KD never goes to them, so history would have been rewritten.
Yeah, then the Bulls would definitely be the number one team.
Yeah. Or maybe KD still goes there because he's such a snake. Who knows?
Imagine going to the Warriors after they win the championship.
I mean, I've seen a couple documentaries on it, and, like, it seemed like KD was still leaning towards going to the Warriors anyway because he was just tired of playing with Russ.
Yeah, that's what he says. He said he had, like, his mind already made up before the playoffs started, unless they won the whole thing.
Yeah, and I mean, image-wise, it was tough enough on him, you know, switching over to a team that won 73 games the season before, but if he goes to a team that wins a championship on top of that, like, oh my goodness, he would be seen in an even lower light than he already is.
Yeah, that'd be bad. Also, shout out to the Heat. Repeating in 12 and 13.
Yeah, that was going to be one of my shout-outs, even though I'm not a big LeBron fan. That 2013 Heat team, in that epic Game 6 comeback with Ray Allen shot to tie the game, was something else. And that season, I think they had like a 26-game winning streak somewhere in the season. They had some tough matchups, but they beat a very good Spurs team in the finals as well.
I'm still pissed they didn't call that foul on LeBron going against KD in game one of the finals. In their first year, they won the championship. Because if they call a foul, which it was a foul, he clearly hit him on the wrist. They call a foul in that situation, I think OKC probably wins that game too, and then who knows what would happen after that.
Dude, this is playoff basketball, Josh. Come on, man. There's no fouls.
You would think in that kind of moment, though, when a guy clearly, I mean, from 5 feet away, KD doesn't miss like that. I mean, come on. It's an obvious foul.
Yeah, but LeBron's LeBron. There's no way he's not going to get those calls. The Heat won 27 games that year. How crazy is that? 27 straight, I mean.
Oh, third longest. Quite the run that year.
Yeah, second longest streak, unless you count the Warriors 28-game streak, which went over 2 years. I don't count that. That's dumb. So the Heat went 27. LeBron, at one point, LeBron had like a 60% field goal percentage that year too, remember?
Yeah, he was being very selective on the shots that he was taking. Like, he was trying to be the most efficient LeBron of, you know, his career, essentially.
Yeah.
Just by taking shots at the basket. And he was playing a lot more pick and roll to where he was the roll man too, which helped him a lot.
He was literally just going in for layups. Or dunks, obviously. But
yeah, they had him in the Draymond role. And like, how are you supposed to stop that guy?
You don't. That's what they want. Well, one of the reasons they won, I guess. And the 11 Mavericks, I want to give them a special shout out just because, well, if they didn't win, we would look at Dirk Nowitzki very differently with his career, right? He wouldn't be lauded as one of the best, well, probably the second best international player ever, but it wouldn't be as mythical as he is now. You know what I mean?
I think they're the most underrated champion of all time. Because even though they had one of the worst point differentials overall, like, you look at the teams that they faced, like, they were monsters, man. Like, the teams in the playoffs that they faced, like, Portland was a really tough team back then. And then you had, like, the Lakers, who obviously coming off a championship, and Dallas swept them. And then I think that's where they started to, like, really gain the confidence in that. They thought they could win it all after they played that series and just, you know, swept the Lakers off the floor. And then you have OKC, where they won in five games against a super stacked team. And then obviously you have LeBron, Wade, and Bosch in their first year. So if you compare playoff runs throughout the last 30 years, that one might be the toughest one.
Yeah. I think they were a 6 seed, right?
No. Or they were not a 6 seed.
Did they have home court advantage? I remember them not being like a top 2 or 3.
They were second in the Southwest Division, so I think they were the 3 seed.
That's crazy.
So they were on the road against the Lakers in the first two games, and I remember them squeaking out, I think it was game 2, when Dirk hit a really big shot, obviously, but it was game 1. They won 96-94, and then the last three games, it was, you know, a bigger differential overall.
That's when the Lakers, like, fully collapsed. Andrew Bynum just knocked J.J. Barea out of the air.
Yeah, then game 4, he like nearly decapitated him.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the demise of the Lakers. But yeah, that 11 run was very forgotten. You're right. It's very true. Because they didn't repeat. And you see so many repeat champions like lately.
Well, that's because like Cuban decided not to bring back Chandler. And yeah, he also hurt a kid too.
Yeah, cheaped out way too much. And then last one I want to shout out, at least, obviously, the 09 and 10 Lakers. R.I.P. Kobe.
Trash.
Get the fuck out of here.
Wow.
Those Lakers teams were like the worst out of the entire group of the last 15, 20
years. And it was amazing how they still ended up beating the Celtics.
Yeah, they beat the Celtics because the Celtics lost Perkins in like game 6, I think it was. And they lost KG, I think, right before that, didn't they? That was next year after that.
Yeah, KG played that series.
Yeah. It was next year after that. Bitter. Boston had a crazy run, then KG had a knee injury, and that basically destroyed, you know, all the run that they were on at that time.
Yeah, I mean, that's what happens when you're old, right?
No, but that Celtics team might have been the best one that they had overall until KG got injured, because they were destroying teams.
They actually were. Too. That team was better than 08, but, you know, that's what happens. Injuries happen, man.
Yep.
It's a damn shame. But you can't hate on that Lakers team that much. Get out of here.
That Lakers team sucked. In terms of like comparing them to other championship teams, they're definitely at the bottom.
I wouldn't say they're the bottom, but they're definitely not
an upper seed. They played Sasha Vujacic.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. I mean, that Lakers team...
Jordan Farmar. I mean, come on, man.
But that's not the game that they had, though. That team was based around Kobe, Pau, and Lamar Odom. You know this.
Yeah, Bynum was really good too back then.
Like 1 or 2 weeks ago, you said Pau Gasol was probably their best power forward in history, or their second best power forward of the Lakers. Come on, man.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, in comparison to their championship teams, I don't think they're up to par with most of them.
I don't know, man. I think they could easily take... I don't want to say it, but probably the 04 Pistons. I think they could take the 06 Heat. I don't think that Heat team was actually like, I think that team just got hot at the very right time. How about that? Hot take.
Miami had a lot more depth though than the Lakers did.
Yeah, but you know, it's the playoffs. Who cares about depth?
Yeah.
It's the finals, you know?
Not a fan.
Yeah, I know. You don't like Kobe. It's fine.
Relax.
All right, you guys got anything else here? I hope you enjoy watching Horse tomorrow, because I will just be watching the highlights.
Yeah, I might just wait for the highlights to come out on like Twitter and stuff, so we'll see.
All right, you guys watching anything good before we leave? I need some new Netflix stuff. I finished Ozark.
Oh, damn.
I'm waiting for Billions.
Oh, when's Billions come back?
Should be May.
Oh, man.
Ooh, exciting.
We'll still be in quarantine. It's fine.
Yeah, but the problem is it comes out weekly.
True. So every Sunday... Yo, we should just have a viewing party every Sunday night.
Yeah,
on Zoom. We'll have a WhatsApp call, and then we'll start watching at the exact same time. Just like the old days.
Yep. That's a great show, though. Probably one of the best on TV right now.
Oh, for sure. Definitely.
Them in Succession.
Yeah, Succession is good.
So good.
All right. I think that's all the time we've got. I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe on iTunes. Find us on all the other podcast platforms. You got Stitcher, Google Play, Anchor, Spotify, all the majors. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Stretch4Pod. And until next time, peace.